Gordon Pinter, it's Real 2, and you were just running up to the Salt Beach in the small assault craft, Gordon, weren't you?
Yes. at this time, the coxswains of the little boats, we're now sort of firing drain guns at the off the craft at some of the beach positions, but there was all sorts of, the Germans had put a lot of, well, I think they called them Hydra. They were with anti-tank mines in the water near the beach, and of course these had to be, you know, dodged sort of thing. But eventually the front came down of the assault craft and we were out. Of course they couldn't possibly get into the dry beach, so this we were, nearly all of us waded through the surf, soaked to the skin sort of thing before we landed.
How deep was it, Gordon?
Some of us looked around a chest.
Yeah.
The water is that they did, you know, they couldn't possibly get in so too near.
What about weapons? Did they get wet or danger of that?
Well, we made sure we held them up, of course, you know. And then we were onto the beach, and of course, chaos reigns, because we were told this would happen, by the way, because all the training for beach landing, it all depends on what the enemy does as well. And all we could do is the different platoons went for the different objectives, and we were to lose men, especially the colonel of the regiment, very quickly.
So just to recap, because now, just for the tape, you've landed on Salt Beach at about 7 o'clock in the morning,
yes.
I believe you said, was that?
About, yes, it was 06:55 when we landed, practically 7.
Was that the first wave?
This was the first wave.
First wave assaulting the beaches of Normandy on Salt Beach with 3rd Div.
3rd Div.
As part of 3rd Div.
3rd Div.
And the Orne is to your left. The River Orne is to your left as you land.
Easterham and the mouth of the River Orne is to the left.
That's it. Okay. So you said your commanding officer was killed on the first day?
He was killed immediately, and I always remember I was with B Company, and we landed, behind the one of the assaulting companies. The two assaulting companies were A and C. We were the following up. And when we landed, we were practically landing at the same time because of the timing of the boat.
Yeah.
And we were thrown practically into the right mess. And I always remember that one of our subalterns, a Lieutenant Bell Walker, immediately went to knock out a strong point. He did this with a charge, but unfortunately he was killed with a bout of fire from another strong point.
Was there a lot of incoming fire at this stage?
Oh, tremendous. And of course there was heavy guns firing across the beach from somewhere on the, I should imagine, some of the Easterham or something like that was firing right along the beach. This was the worst part of it, of course.
Yeah.
There was actually no mines on the beach, thank God, but then we lost our company commander, which was a very great loss. And we were taking losses right now. I always remember the beach commander, who was a naval officer on the beach. He was pushing us forward. We hadn't got the weight. There is a feeling when you see a friend go down that you want to sort of attend to him. But the idea was to get through the beach as fast as possible, not away from it.
And was there a lot of sign of this, friends going down?
Oh yes, of course, right, left and centre, you know. There was you see shrapnel was all over the place, God knows when. You're just lucky if you missed it sort of thing. And then eventually we got through, it seemed like an eternity, but it wouldn't be long. But we got through and consolidated the top of the beach. And then we took stock and heard the casualties that had been taken. I remember there was one beach exit. Everything was all chaos, as I said. The engineers had made beach exits through the mines, because the mines were on the top. And there was a very narrow strip. And you had to get through it very, very quickly as infantry, because the tanks were also getting off the beach. And of course, they wouldn't stop for anybody. And if you were unfortunate to fall, I'm afraid you'd be gone under the tank. Well, in fact, some wounded people actually did.
Those tanks were swimming tanks.
These were the swimming tanks. They were the ones that, I think, 4th to 7th Dragoon Guards, they had these swimming tanks. that had come in. Most of them, quite a lot of them, had actually made it. Some had sunk, of course, you know, with the crack, but a lot of them had made it.
Yeah.
And they were very beneficial, of course. I believe the Americans didn't opt for these pensions, they suffered accordingly,
yeah.
because they could do anything, they could slash the mines, you know, they had charges that they could throw at the strong points.
They were called Hobart's Funnies or something, weren't they?
It was a 78 Farmer Division.
Mm.
And even if you came against a big ditch and anti-tank it, you could throw a sort of roll of sort of mesh in there and go across it, you know. Mm. They were very, very marvellous machines, very well thought of.
I think from memory, Gordon, you landed at Hermanville, wasn't it?
It was directly in front of the village of Hermanville, which is about a mile inland.
Yep.
And I well remember, as we after we sort of got over the shock of the losses, we were then told that our first objective was Hermanville, and we must immediately proceed forward.
Yeah.
This we did, I remember, through the fields. I remember as we went through the fields, seeing a pile of French civilians in the little trenches that they'd got dug out for themselves in the fields. And the first, we had what we call the assault helmet. We were the first division to have this assault helmet. And it wasn't exactly like the previous helmet. So the French, all we could hear from the French was, Viva, Viva Americano.
Oh, right.
They thought we were Americans, and we soon told them we were Anglo, you know.
Mm.
Anyway, we then went in and we took Hermanville and took our first, well, huge batch of prisoners in Hermanville. The cattle had given up.
Mm.
And we'd taken that about 9 o'clock in the morning. It was the first place really to be taken.
Yeah. You said a few minutes ago, you said after we recovered from our sort of losses, because from being this highly trained, you were talking off tape, weren't you?
Yes.
Highly trained unit that hit the beaches, almost immediately you had some very serious losses, didn't you?
Yes, yes. But we hadn't at that time replaced them, because when we went to Hermanville.
Yeah.
We actually took Hermanville, and as we eventually consolidated on the far end of Hermanville, then the reinforcements came up to us. That's when we received the reinforcements.
Yeah.
We were doing sort of in a defensive position in the woods in front of Hermanville.
Yeah. And would that still be on June 6th, same day?
Well, this was all, as we always call it, the longest day, and believe me, it seemed to be all the time.
Mm.
I mean, we no sooner got into the edge of the woods where we were defending the positions we'd got, the perimeter. The 8th Brigade, the different brigades had different jobs, of course. 8th Brigade was to take the immediate beach area.
Mm.
Then 9th Brigade, and 185, 9th Brigade with the leapfroggers, and 185 Brigade would go further on, and they were to actually push right up the road to Calm and try and make the assault on Calm. All these things were on the plans, of course, but they were held up with various things. I remember when we were on the front of this wood and we were just doing our first little meal with Tommy Vayners and a cup of tea and things, we were then informed that the division in front of us was an armoured division, and was sending a battle group down the road towards us. I think it was something like 30 tanks. And this frightened us, because of course we hadn't any real tank divisions on shore.
Mm.
But it did come down in between us and the Canadians. But it was met with the 4th to 7th Dragoon Guards and various others with their tanks in hold-down positions. Knocked out about 6 right away. And the division's anti-tank ones knocked out a huge number. But then, this was getting towards the evening of D-Day, and then a magnificent sight came over, when a huge armada of more planes came over, dropping the Germans thought were the reserves for the airborne division.
Yes.
But they were really only supplies. But this armoured attack that they were putting up, as soon as they saw these, they knew that they were dropping behind them, so they immediately retreated. It was a good thing.
Well, they thought that they were being dropped behind.
They thought, but they were the only supplies for the airborne division, you know.
Because I presume that could have been disastrous if that armour had...
Well, it just got right to the coast. They could have split up, yes.
Yeah.
It could have split them in two, the Canadians and us, and so mocked us up, sort of thing, you know. Because they were very, very good, experienced divisions.
Mm.
We were... At first, on the beaches, we were fighting sort of sometimes second-class troops. Some of them had been even got from Poland and Russia. They had been impressed into the German army. But there were some, you know, there's some very, very good units, and they put up a good fight, but most of them were what you call second-class troops. They tended to keep their first-class troops in the, just in the rear.
Yeah. But now already, on this first day, you were seeing signs of panzer divisions, presumably. Armour, yeah. German armour, etc.
Yes, it was just about now that we started having designations of what the companies were going to do in the beach perimeter. B Company itself, we were told to act as like a fire brigade. And this meant that all the positions still holding out, we had to go and try and sort them out. For instance, there were two Marine commandos held up on the beaches at Luxemer and Leonsemer, which was just away from Hermanville. Yeah. And we sort of went across and came in from the rear, and between us we took these places. Mm. Then the next job we had to do, B Company, was march right across the brigade perimeter and go to help defend Pegasus Bridge, which had been taken earlier that morning by the Airborne Division. And we were in trenches on the side of the canal, and the Germans were on the other side. It was quite hectic, and of course they were sending planes to try and bomb the bridge.
And that was just B Company that went there.
Just B Company. We just all the other companies. Mm. I don't know what they were doing. Mm. They were probably consolidating. Mm. And we were only there a day because then the 51st Highland Division had landed. Had now landed behind us, and they were sent up. They were going into this sector, and they were to relieve us and let us go back to our own division. And this is what happened.
Because it's not well known, that fact, is it? You said
I've never seen it mentioned that the South Lancs or anything of the 3rd Division was on the canal.
Mm-hmm. So you were in Hermanville prior to that, weren't you?
Yes,
pushing
yes.
your way
yes.
inland, presumably, yes. from Hermanville.
Yes. Then I was saying, when we consolidated, it was the first time the companies really came together, was just after that. I always remember, the first thing we saw was A Company, I remember. And I had a lot of friends in A Company, and of course there was one chap I was looking for, especially with a Lance Corporal, Dick Gallo. He was a bosom friend of mine. And I saw another chap called Devereaux, which was another friend of mine. I said, "Where's Dick?" And he just shook his head.
Mm.
And it turned out Dick had been killed on the beach. It really upset me then.
Mm.
I don't know why it seemed to bring the things more to me, seeing a personal friend of mine sort of, you know,
yes.
killed.
Yes.
And then I saw another company. And I always remember, I think we had a little break then. We were able to have a little place where a little cappy, like a spaniel or whatever they call them, you know, and we were sort of able to relax for a few hours. And there was a sergeant that had served with my brother in the 1st Battalion before Dunkirk. And I always looked up to him. He was a sort of role model for me. I thought he was a magnificent soldier, the sergeant. And he was a marvellous trainer and everything. And I suppose really he was a John Wayne type character to me.
Mm.
And I saw him sitting down and he looked very morose. And I said to him, what's the matter? And I was always called Johnny, by the way, in the army, even though my name was Gordon. And he said, "Oh, it's all right, Johnny." He said, "I'll be all right." But he never was. He was to actually be one of the non-battle casualties. He was to shoot himself through his foot.
Oh, right.
But I never felt anything wrong about him. And of course, in this war, they just called it battle fatigue because people can only stand so much.
Mm.
And he just reached his time, you know.
But this happened early on.
This happened early on, yeah.
So that was very quick to happen.
It's something that just gone click, you know. Mm. I don't know whether it was because of the experiences in Dunkirk or what, you know.
Mm.
But then, as I say, then we were told that we were going up the main axis after the other brigades, up the main axis to the Calm Road. Mm. Well, that was unbelievable. That was very dire. We were marching up this road, and you picture a scene where there's copses or woods on each side of the road at various places. What really upset us was as we went up the road, where the other brigades had been and commandos and etc., was at the side of the road. You see a rifle upside down in the thing with a helmet on top, which is a temporary grave, so that they were all picked up later, and this was quite frequent.
So this is what's called sort of baptism of fire, really, is not something, isn't it?
Baptism of fire.
And very sudden, you know, after...
Tremendous. Yeah. Because then they were, the Germans were really worried down and trying to counter-attack. And then we were, I always remember we moved off into a wood. I think we took over from one of the regiments of our previous brigade, of the 3rd Division. And I think it was getting dark at the time, because I took over from a corporal and took over his position with their hastily dug trenches. And I remember spending the whole night in these trenches, and the fire was unbelievable, because of course the Germans knew all these positions because they'd been in them. And they were absolutely, it was hell, there was trees getting locked down, branches there, everything.
Yeah.
And to my horror, the next morning, when I got light, I realised that the chap had been buried in the damn trench filled with him.
Yes.
The bottom, you know, he just couldn't move out. It was conditions of hell, really, because they knew where we were, and the terrific fire, especially from 88, was on top of us, you know.
Yeah. It was, a lot of the country there was very good defensive country, wasn't it?
Oh, exactly. There again, the pundits after the war who said that, you know, we were slow and all this caper, they should have been there, because it was perfect defensive country. I also remember as we moved up to one brigade, got a terrible battering. I think it was the Royal Rifles of one of the brigades. They went across open country against the wood, and they were practically cut down to a man.
Yeah.
I mean, this was happening all the time. And there was another situation where we were in one wood, and I remember the Germans were in another wood, not too far away. But they sent across bombers to bomb them out this wood because we couldn't move them.
Mm.
And unfortunately, the American bombers, and we picked the wrong wood. And I don't know whether the Germans had binoculars on us, but they must have killed themselves laughing because the bombs fell on our wood instead of theirs.
Yeah.
And these kind of things happen, of course.
It's funny almost now to look back on that, but of course at the time, it's not funny, that, is it?
Well, people don't realise that in any battle, and I suppose it happened in the First World War as well, there's as many people get killed by our own friendly fire as get killed by the enemy.
Mm.
It can't be avoided, really, because guns, especially the way they were firing, the battle wear. And of course, where they say if they sort of had it for 600 yards, it might be only firing 500 yards. So you might be in the danger area of your own guns, and this happened quite a few times.
Yes, yes. What about, you mentioned tanks, German tanks, what about German aircraft? Was there much of that?
Very little, very little. I think there was a couple of German aircraft where came across the beach, and one had a lucky hit on an armament place already being established and blew it up. It looked very, you know, looked quite heavy.
Mm.
But then they bang it off. But anything that appeared was immediately pounced on by a huge number of planes that were just circling the beach all the time.
Mm.
Obviously, they hadn't got an air strip then, so they were still coming from England.
Because yes.
With this part of the channel was 100 miles across, so they couldn't stay long. But they chopped down anything that came in, you know. There was no chance, and there's very few German aircraft that came across the wall.
No. What's the next place you remember, Gordon, after Ermenville?
Well, the next place, of course, like we were moving up this road, and we came across the Perrier's Ridge, which is halfway between our landing and Calm. And that was about the farthest that the leading brigade had reached, and been held up and been terribly cut up by Tiger tanks that appeared for the first time. And they just chewed up anything that was sent against them. And we suddenly realised then that there was quite a few strong points protecting Calm, which were very, very heavily... and each brigade had to attack one of these, by the way.
Mm.
It was not long after this that we came up to a place called Lilando, and we were there, and it was the first time we were able to make letters back home. And I always remember writing. Well, I was married then.
At the time.
And I remember one writing to Joan and saying, "Don't worry, I'm keeping the head down and I'm all right." It was not long before this was not proved right. Then we moved forward up the axis again towards Calm, and my company all of a sudden got the information that we would have to attack a place called the Chateau Villon.
Yes.
Now we didn't know anything about this except it was a German strong point. And we were issued with instructions that we'd be a night attack and we would move up at 23:59 at night. Now we'd been on fighting patrols in the area and we knew what was in the area. One of the patrols, incidentally, I'd gone on, we were searching through for a break in the communication wires, and we were about 12 people, and we were crawling through at night, and we all of a sudden came to a place where we were sitting on top of an obviously occupied place, and we thought, then we heard German voices, and we realised we'd gone too far, and we'd gone the wrong place. We soon got out of there, you know. We were following the wrong wires, in other words. But as I say, then we got told there was going to be this attack on the Chateau Lalonde.
What sort of date is that, Gordon?
So this was about 23rd of June.
Right.
23rd of June. Mm. And we actually went across this, we moved up across this cornfield, and we had an open order, and there was very little going on there. The Germans must have had an idea there might be something, so they come a bit of deviltry fire. Falling, quite a few casualties, but nothing to speak of. And then we reached an orchard, which we found out later was directly in front of the chateau. In other words, it is their main position.
Mm.
And we broke into the orchard, and immediately we came on the fixed line machine gun fire, with tracer, of course, at night. And there was quite a skirmish there.
That's a fixed line you talk about there, Gordon. That's where, as far as I understand it, is where the Germans have set up designated firing lines.
Where we could possibly come in, yes.
Yeah.
And of course we then, I always remember, because Captain Mjolison, who was then the company commander, I was the nearest NCO towards him. And you see, seeing me, she shouted to me to get as many brain gunners as I could to engage these fixed machine guns. Of course, shouting and that kind of thing was ridiculous. But in any case, I seemed to get four or five Bengals with me.
Yeah.
And we actually knocked out these. We knocked them out, and good long story short, we took the position. This was very shortly after, maybe half an hour. And then we were in an orchard, and we were right in front of the chateau, and we'd taken prisoners, of course, and we saw the consolidated on the front edge. Immediately facing the wood in front of the chateau. In other words, a very successful operation.
Mm.
A company had come up on the left of us in another place, but they were a bit farther away from us. Now, we were in a situation where we expected immediately it was quiet, an ominous quiet. We thought, well, they'll send tanks up now to reinforce us, and anti-tank guns, and probably reinforcements, you know, because we'd taken the position. Well, hour went, another hour went, and then it got near 4 o'clock. And about 3:45, I've never seen anything like it since we'd landed. They hit us with everything. There was a bombardment that was unbelievable. It was just, we'd only had a chance to sort of scrape a little trench. As you can imagine, we hadn't chance any big, any trenches. So we were hovering in the knees with this tremendous bombardment, which they knew wherever we were. And we had taken tremendous casualties then, as well as that. We were just trying to get away in one way or the other, you know. We didn't know what was coming, and then we heard the ominous sound of tank engines.
So what was it, tanks firing at you, or mortar fire, no, or shell fire?
Yeah, 88 fire.
Oh, right.
German 88 fire, we used them. And tanks, of course, as I was to find out later.
Mm.
And then we heard these tank engines, and we knew, surely something's going to come up to help us now, but I'm afraid nothing came up. And of course, they eventually came through, and it was still dark at 4 o'clock in the morning, even though it's summer. It was just a little whispered light, but nevertheless, these tanks came forward, And of course, one of them, the first thing I knew is one of them reared right up over his head, a monster who turned out to be a panther type German tank, which is a very, very good tank, and actually fell on one of our sections, pushing them into the ground. Unbelievable. And of course, it just seemed to stand on this hedge with its machine gun going right across the pile, and we were trying to sort of get away from it in this shallow ditch. But
how many people did you have in this sort of perimeter of this?
120 men in the company.
It was just one company, just
B company. Yeah. And we were trying to get away from this part because there's nothing we could do. An officer tried to fire with a pierce at the tank, but it fell short, and that was our last chance of anti-tank defense.
Yes.
And of course, the only thing we could do is try and get away from this because there's nothing we could do against it. And we were crawling away from it, and unfortunately that another tank had come over the other side, as we were to hear from the leading chap who was told to get on with it, but shouted back, if you can get past this monster, come to the front.
Yes.
Well, anyhow, this went on, and then of course they had Panzer Grenadiers, which followed their infantry, in other words, to follow their tanks, burst into the orchard, and we just stood up sort of thing and met them. There was nothing else we could do. There was the adrenaline had come into you sort of thing, and you knew, you felt you'd gone any road, so you just faced them, And after a short skirmish, I suppose, there was tremendous casualties. My platoon itself, Sergeant Horan was the platoon commander, and the first thing I was going on, also myself, a total smack in the side of my face. That's all I can say. People have often asked me since with a terrible pain. It was nothing, it was just like a hammer.
Hmm.
It was just like a hammer hitting me in the face. And I was thrown across the side from a platoon sergeant whose face was going black down. I knew he'd been sort of hit badly, and he was obviously dying. And as far as I know, most of my platoon was wiped out in that. It was machine gun fire, I think, from one of the tanks. A friend of mine has since told me that it was Panzer Grenadiers, but I can't really recall that. All it seemed to me was it was totally dark, so we couldn't be sure. I was lying across, and I thought, well, I'm dying. I felt I'd been hit obviously in the face, and I thought I was bleeding terribly, and I thought I was dying. I was choking because a lot of my top teeth had gone down my throat, and I always remember somebody, it was a lance corporal who came across, and he sort of yanked this out of my throat with his fingers. This lance corporal incidentally died last year.
Oh, right.
One of the survivors,
I
didn't even know that it was him until well after the war when I met him later on. Anyway, at that time it was just I actually thought I was dying.
Just prior to that, in this sort of firefight, fairly brief firefight, you described it between the UB company and the Panzer Grenadiers, you said people were going down all round, both sides, presumably.
No, I don't think they took terribly many casualties at this stage. Remember, they've been overrun before by because, I mean, the weight of fire of the tanks was keeping their heads down. And remember, we just had a tremendous bombardment on us, The lads were doing their best, but I don't think we could possibly... We were obviously firing at them, but this was half dark, you see. You wouldn't know whether it caused many casualties or not. Some of them were flitting through the woods. Then there was a sort of ominous silence sort of thing for a bit. And obviously the company had suffered terribly. And the next thing that I knew was I thought, well, I don't seem to be dying, sort of thing. And the next thing I knew was a German officer over me. And he sort of beckoned. And anyhow, two German soldiers came up and they got on each side of me. And they were obviously taking me to a German aid post, which I found later. I believe later on, as I said, I've since found out from a friend, there was hardly any left, of course, but what was left was under 10, and they were all sort of lined up, and quite a few of them were wounded, of course.
under 10 from 120.
Oh, yes, yes. And anything that was left was captured. The only thing the person had got out was the company commander, who we thought was going to try and get reinforcements, but he'd left the field previously. Nobody else got out that field. It was like a sort of sheet wall around with the fire. It was absolutely... We found out later, my lieutenant of A Company that tried to reach us, that it was a sheet of wall of flame that it couldn't be got through. Nobody could get in or out. Anyway, I was taken to a German aid post where I was put on an emergency dressing. That's all they could do at the time, huge shell dressing sort of thing. It was then, incidentally, with this aid post was at the side of the chateau itself. It was the first time that I could see what we had been facing. The powers that be had sent us up against a ridiculously strong position. There was a huge number of tanks, all hauled down. They'd all been dug out in the soil and were hauled down. All these big tanks, right down the chateau.
Yeah. Well, presumably the powers that be didn't realise the German strength there.
No, well, they don't.